Hello and welcome to The Double Pivot, the world's most agreeable soccer analytics podcast. I am Michael Cayley, and there's been some news. I don't know if you were paying attention, but there's a Super League that people are trying to form. I don't know if you've been on Twitter all day or if you like do something better with your mental health, but if you've been on Twitter all day, you have seen everyone weighing in on this Super League. All of the Mats with newsletters, except for Matt Levine, who knows better, weighed in, and we are going
Matt
to
Taibbi did not weigh in either, just for the record.
Well, that's good. I did not want to hear about why critical race theory caused this. Yeah, Brunig and Iglesias, and God knows all of them, were like so happy that there's a continent-wide top Super League.
Stoller asked for what his opinion was supposed to be on this from a corporate power perspective.
Gorgeous. Yeah, so we spent all day arguing with people on Twitter about it, and now we want to talk about it with you and sort of really like walk through the what the system is and what we see as sort of the structural causes of this, what people are attempting to do beyond the rhetoric of it, and a little bit of what we think might happen. Joined by Mike Goodman, who has been busy today.
Just a bit. The music you heard on the way in is the Wailers. We've got Max with us on the other side of the virtual glass. Please download, subscribe, make us happy as podcasters. Subscribe at patreon.com/doublepivot, where this week we're doing something a little bit different because this is a massive story. So the two of us are going to talk about it on this episode, and we're going to do another episode later this week where we do an interview about it. And we're going to put those both on the free side. So I think we just think it's a huge story and it's worth doing. So we will just have a Moussa Dembélé level this week on the pay side. On the other hand, the Moussa Dembélé is that Jose Mourinho got fired on a Monday morning and nobody noticed.
Yeah, this is the C story of the week.
So we will talk about that over there at some point. Yeah, I've been a little bit busy. There have been a lot of people reading the website, which is nice. We have a really good explainer that me and Igor Mello put together that we've just sort of been continually updating, so you can do some one-stop shopping for like the nuts and bolts of everything that's happened and who's reacted and who said what and all that jazz over at cbs.com/soccer, which I highly recommend. But if the traffic numbers are any indication, all of you have already been there.
Yeah, so I think we should... I do think it's worth going through those sort of explainery specifics for a minute.
Yeah.
Because, like, it is kind of interesting that they're really just proposing a Champions League, like, except that they get to run it. Like, the actual game side of it, I kind of expected the game side of it to have more, like, heft to it. Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, so let's talk about, the structure of the Super League. Is a 20-team league, 15 permanent members, 5 who qualify yearly, split into 2. It's soccer, so they're called groups. We might call them divisions or conferences as Americans. And they play everybody in your group, home and away. So that's 9 times 2, 18 matches. The top 3 from each side automatically move to the quarterfinals. And then teams 4 and 5... from each 10-team group, do a whole, you know, a two-tie play-in to get to the quarterfinals, which basically means you have an 18-game regular season followed by half the teams making the playoffs.
Yep.
It's just a very American-structured league.
Yeah.
You know, like, for good or bad, like, for... You know, I think that cuts both ways, right? Like... There are a lot of people that are saying that this won't work, and, like, clearly, it will work as a structure for a competitive league. On the other side, like, there are plenty of downsides to the structure of American leagues when it comes to competitiveness, when it comes to dead games, when it comes to, like, all of these things that can plague an American regular season will plague this. So, you know, for better or worse, that's the structure of the league. And it's not, like, all that much different from what UEFA was planning to eventually implement.
Right. Like, it is... And one thing that I saw going around a bunch that I felt it was just like some kind of wishful thinking, is that if they implement this, it will in some way be unpopular or unsuccessful. And I just find that exceptionally unlikely. Like, this is a perfectly normal competitive structure among many. And if this league happens, and if these teams are able to, and that's a big question, but if it happens, it'll be the best teams in the world playing a bunch of games for a trophy that they're all trying to win. And everyone will watch that, and it will make money. Like,
will it be the best teams in the world?
I mean, if they succeed at doing this the way they want to.
But why? Like, I don't think there's particularly a problem with there being just several permanently bad teams in a league. Like, that can happen. But, like, if you look at where European soccer is now, right? And you look at where Arsenal and Spurs are now, and you look at, like, where AC Milan is now. Like, those three teams in particular are borderline top 20. Milan is outside the top 20. Arsenal and Spurs are borderline. Arsenal probably on sort of how they've played in, but the results have been, whatever.
Yeah.
Once you get in the league and you are a bottom half of the table team, sort of fairly permanently, like, yes, maybe everything outside the Super League erodes, fine, but, like, where are you going to get, like, why is the 17th team, best team in the Super League, permanently better than Leicester City?
So, two things here. One is, I meant, like, the best teams in the world in a more, like, it'll have the 5 to 10 best teams in the world.
Yes. Like, oh, absolutely.
You certainly don't guarantee the exact 15 or 20 best, but you're taking a shot at it. The other thing here I think this gets us into is the financial structure of this and why they're doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
And so the present Champions League pulls in revenues around 2 billion euros. Combined with Europa League and a few other things, you could push up to 3 billion euros that gets distributed. And out of this, teams at the very top of it, I think when the year that Liverpool won, I think they got 115 million euros out of that. So that is, you can, you know, 115 million euros. They got maybe 5% of the Champions League revenues and a couple percent of the overall revenues of the Champions League and Europa League and the various UEFA tournaments. And this proposes, one, their business model appears to project that they're going to make even more money than this. They're going to have more games. They're projecting, I think there's a report in the Financial Times piece that they're looking at about 4 billion maybe in revenues, and then most of it is going to be distributed among the 15 teams, with smaller proportions given to the five that qualify on merit in some fashion. And so they are looking at distributing, they are planning, at least in their financial documents, to grow the pie. And then they are also planning in their financial documents to hoard the pie.
Yes.
So now you are looking at hundreds of millions of euros for each of the teams that is in this. And then they have one of the things in that Financial Times piece, we'll put a bunch of links in the show notes for this, is that they are planning on having sort of a welcome payment, which I believe is called an infrastructure grant, which is amazing. It is Infrastructure Week in European football as well. And this is underwritten by the bank JP Morgan, who are expecting there to be hundreds of millions to disperse right from the beginning that is then paid off in a loan that the clubs will slowly pay off. They are projecting these massive revenues, allowing them to start this up with hundreds of millions of euros for each of the clubs involved. And so one of the plans here, clearly, on the revenue side, is to guarantee larger revenues for these clubs, even the very top clubs, than they were getting before from the Champions League. And that and much larger revenues for clubs like AC Milan and Arsenal and Spurs. And then on top of that, that because they are permanent members, that these revenues are guaranteed. So what they are planning is a significant increase in their European revenues. I think one of the interesting questions here is how that nets out in different leagues, based on the money that they were making from their league play and how that balances out. Because, again, the other thing about this is that this is a Champions League. Like, you talk about us, sort of, this is a second point, but you talk about like a Super League, it might sound like they're leaving their domestic leagues. And that is not the plan here.
That's not the plan.
The plan, there's only as many, the number of games that they're proposing is larger than the group stage, but it is not large enough to fill an entire schedule. And the revenue that they are proposing to add is very, very large, but it's not large enough to fill the whole of all of the money that the Premier League teams make. So they are currently planning on there being other revenues as well for these clubs.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we should probably talk about like specifically what the structure of the investment here being, which is that these teams get a lump sum borrowed against what they assume to be the sale of the TV rights down the road. Now, part of what is going on here is, I think it is fair to say that Europe's biggest soccer clubs look around and think, many of them, we need capital investment. Not all of them equally. Like Chelsea doesn't. Manchester City doesn't. Real Madrid probably could do with it. Barcelona clearly needs it. I'm sure Liverpool are quite happy and Arsenal are quite happy and Spurs to have this capital investment after what is absolutely, truly, accurately a very difficult economic period. Now, the difference between we are losing money and it is fatal to our business that we have lost money over the last year is a mammoth gulf, right? Just like an absolutely mammoth gulf. So we should take all of that with a grain of salt. But I am absolutely convinced that like it is good business for these clubs to like draw against future earnings to get capital investment now after a year without fans in the stands. Okay, that's the plan. The thing is, of course, then you lock everybody out. Like, that's the second part of the plan. Like, you are taking what is a reasonable, if not necessary, business aim here. And then you are using that decision to make a power grab to entrench yourselves structurally forever. And that has all sorts of repercussions, right? Like, and honestly, like, that is the thing that, it is the entrenching yourself forever more than anything else that is drawing the ire and condemnation. I think in a world where they did a Super League that had, like, some form of like, promotion and relegation that didn't lock 15 teams in, or that was like 15 of 30, maybe, you might see like something, you might see less of an uproar about it. But it is the combination of those two things that, you know, while also wanting to remain in domestic competitions. And, I mean, I feel like this is a bad thing structurally to do, and it is one that isn't necessary if you're pulling forward the capital money. Like, if you could have done this and gotten the capital investment such that you capitalized yourselves all to be healthy economically, like, I don't know why AC Milan needs to be guaranteed a spot in this place in perpetuity, you know? Like, guarantee yourself some extra money for taking the risk to form the league. Say that as a forming partner, we will be in it for the first three seasons or whatever. And then as we go, the permanence will ease. or something. And I think it just would have been a pill that went down much more smoothly. But this is a maximal grab from these teams. This is not a pitch that is designed to be accepted. It is a pitch that is designed to either be a negotiation ploy or to be executed despite not being accepted. Like, that's what's going on here.
Yeah, and like, this was, this seems to have been the strategy of how, and this is something I was hoping to talk to Joshua Robinson of the Wall Street Journal about, that like, how this compares to previous ploys of top clubs. That this all, they dropped it all in, they kept it all pretty secret. They kept it all pretty buttoned up. And then they dropped it with like, and Florentino Perez is our chairman, and here's our website, and here's our business prospectus. And like, all of this suddenly came out. Like, this is a quick strike that is being attempted. I think that one of the other important pieces here is that along with, with capital investment now, and then on top of there's capital investment now, there is this guarantee of long-term revenue for the permanent clubs. And then on top of that, I think that there is a goal of forming a group that can credibly do wage suppression.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, so the plan here is to institute a rule that keeps wages at 55% of revenue, which is significantly lower than... That seems high if you're an American sports fan, but it is significantly lower than revenues have been across Europe historically, and or even now. And right now, they are significantly lower than they've historically been across Europe.
Right, yeah. So just to put some numbers on this, the NFL guarantees 48% of revenues go to salaries. NBA is a little fuzzy, but it's between 49% and 51%. NHL is at 50%. Major League Baseball doesn't guarantee a number. It's currently at 48%, and this is but this has been driven down heavily by enforced by collusion in MLB. It had been as high as the low 60% range in the early 2000s. Right now in European football, by contrast, in the Premier League, it's in the mid 60s now. This is similar in La Liga, similar in Serie A. The Bundesliga is in the mid 50s. So the Bundesliga has managed more wage suppression than those other leagues. And this is very, I think it's pretty clear that what the, and they say this in their own documentation in sort of, vague business speak language, but the goal is to both guarantee more revenues and cut the percentage of those new revenues that go to players.
It's good for business.
Yep. And I think that there are areas in European football, and the one that I would point to most clearly is the Championship.
Yes.
Where
wages are too high for it to be an effective league.
Yeah. Like it is. The Championship is going to explode.
Yeah.
If it doesn't explode this summer, which just might happen. There's not a sustainable business plan with the wages that these teams are paying, and they're all paying them with sort of a goal of a couple of winners getting into the Premier League and then getting the revenues that they can get, which goes to one of the other things that I were sort of cycling around. I would sort of pull back a few of these threads as we go through, but one of the things that this threw into relief, I think, is how much the current financial system of football is not working and how much the current competitive system of football is not working. Like, the idea that 15 teams guarantee themselves a space in the whatever in the Super League in this new Champions League is a significant break in certain ways. But it also reflects something of a structural reality. Like, Bayern Munich gets to be in the Champions League each year. Manchester City gets to be in the Champions League each year.
I mean,
the levels of inequality in European football are such that it is not plausible that most of these teams will miss.
How many teams do you think it is just a reality that make the Champions League every season? Right now?
Yeah,
I think it's in the range of five.
I think, at most, right? It's City, it's PSG, it's Bayern. Who else?
It's Barca and Real Madrid.
We were talking earlier this season about, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Barcelona finished sixth this year. I mean, then it turns out that that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, it's one of those things where, like, it is different to have a 95% chance and to have a literal 100% chance.
Yeah,
but it's also not. It's also not that different.
Well, I see. I don't think that that's true. I mean, I think that that's, like, true from, like, a practical perspective, but, like, there is very little consequence to being a revenue-heavy team and blowing yourself up, right? Like, you're not getting relegated. You're not, like, yeah, maybe you won't contend for the championship of your league for a couple of years, but that's fine. Like, even if you're Borussia Dortmund right now, like, what is the consequence you can face for not being good? Well, the only answer to being a good team that messes up is that you miss the Champions League. Like, that is the only consequence there is. Like, Manchester United after Sir Alex Ferguson, the only bad thing that really happened was they didn't qualify for the Champions League for a number of years. You know, what is Arsenal struggling? Right? Like, what is this? They're not really at risk of relegation or anything, but there is a consequence, and that consequence is that they are not in the Champions League. It is, like, the one thing that is the last real bad thing that can happen to these teams. And this takes that away. And I do think that that is, like, a change in kind for European football. Right? Like, I do think that, like, yes, practically it is a small difference, right? Like, what is practically the difference of Spurs finishing fourth and, like, either losing in the group stage or losing in a quarterfinal or a round of 16 or whatever, and now where they just, you know, if they just finish eighth in their Super League group? Like, not practically a lot. But, like, if you are West Ham, the difference is, one year you get to be above Spurs and maybe go to the Champions League the next season, versus in another world where, like, you get to finish fourth, but who cares? And, like, I do think that, like, ironing out that last bit of, like, competitive reward and punishment is a lot bigger effect than just the fact that, like, practically it's not a huge impact.
I think that, like, I don't disagree with any of that. I think that, like, we have gotten used to such a desiccated sense of competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think
we've gotten
true.
Used to the idea that, like, we can't lose the possibility that West Ham might once finish ahead of Spurs. Like, at least that's a big team in West Ham. Like, we have gotten used to the idea that we can't lose the possibility that this might be the one year out of 10 or 20 that an unusual team wins the Premier League or an unusual team wins the Champions League. Like, there are...
Well, I think
this is now what this is the acceleration and concretization of these trends toward lack of competitiveness. This is not, This is not fixing those things for the most part, but,
well,
like,
I think what I'd say is this, though. I mean, I think that is absolutely true, is that we have this, you know, this narrowing sort of horizon of possibility competitively. But in a league where you just have a regular season, You can either institute a playoff system so that lots of teams have a higher variance chance of winning the whole thing, or you can introduce a leveled system in which many teams have the possibility of qualifying for many things throughout, like, the table, right? You know, so, like, you have a 20-team Premier League, and, like, half the teams are qualifying for something good or having something bad happen to them, right? Like half the a full half the spots in the table, you know, pending cup outcomes, have something associated with them. When you institute this new system, you leave the domestic leagues with neither of those things. Like, what, you know, what is, yes, much of what you have left them before is the illusion of competitiveness, right? Like, but what do you have now? You don't even have that now. Like, what is left for these domestic leagues?
Yeah, and so I want to sort of pull this back around to that first question about the best teams in the world, which I think that, like, the goal of this structurally is to make those teams the best teams in the world, because they will have these new guaranteed revenues, and at the same time, they will limit the opportunities for other teams to match those revenues. And so, I mean, I think that the goal here is to create a somewhat more level playing field within the Super League, and by pulling up the ladder behind them, make it relatively stable that these will be the best teams. And I think that this I think that that's like the vision. And I think that you would, I think that the one thing, the one like positive thing you would get out of a Super League is, I think, a greater degree of parity at the top end. The cost of this greater degree of parity at the top end would be, like, I don't know how this ends up balancing out for leagues, and this is why it's been fought so hard, is that they have gone in on this plan which strips the domestic leagues of much of their own competitiveness. And this sort of what I've been calling this kind of like desiccated sense of competitiveness has also been incredibly popular, and people right, love yeah. watching it. Yeah. So I don't know.
Well, you know, my ultimate concern here that I think I alluded to earlier is that the equilibria is not like that the worst teams in the Super League are still better than their competitors in the domestic leagues. That, like, if you're Spurs and you're a bottom half, probably not playoff competitive team in the Super League in a given year or in many given years, there's like every chance that you'll like end up being like a consistently ninth place team or eighth place team in the Premier League while being, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth in your Super League group. And if you hit that equilibrium point and I'm not sure what the incentive is to get out of it. Like, why are you, like, what is the incentive to climb in either the Premier League or your group at the expense of profits at that point?
Yeah, I think that, like, this is something that happens in...
Right. It happens in American sports all the time where you have bottom dwellers, and, like, that's not, I don't think, an inherent problem with the structure of the league, right? Like, those teams happen. It sucks. Whatever. Like, that's sports. But when at the same time what you have in Europe is a Super League playing next to these domestic leagues where it is, like, weekly apparent that you are not as good as a number of teams that don't get to be in the Super League no matter what, that to me is a much bigger competitive problem.
That's interesting. I struggle to think that that's how it comes out because of what they've done to the revenue issue.
Probably not, I suppose, but like...
I think that the problem comes in is more like what competitive equilibrium comes into being in the Premier League at all. Like, if you have teams who, you know, whether Spurs finish third, fifth, or seventh, or ninth doesn't really matter. Like, it matters if, like, one... I mean, you could see situations where, like, Manchester City doesn't care if they win the title, really, because it's, like, the FA Cup, and, like, you don't always field your best team for it. And so, like, the FA Cup, you could have an unusual team making a run at the title. But if they're not making a run at the title, like, what are they even doing?
Yeah.
And what are they competing for late in the season? Who is then watching these games? And then who is paying a fee to the Premier League to broadcast these games? I think that it creates a bunch of risks of just slowly killing off the Premier League and slowly killing off the domestic leagues.
Yes.
Which I think then lead to those Super League teams being the best teams in those leagues, but have, like, won... But I just on just the pure sort of money and power side of it, before getting into the thing that, like, you know, sure would be nice to not kill off all of the teams in European football except for 15 of them. Like, that seems like a bad thing to do. But, like, besides that, there is the Premier League TV contract is not going to be the same anymore over time if that happens.
True. And, I mean, that's true.
And then. On top of that, like, that guaranteeing that revenue doesn't necessarily mean you are, it feels to me like there is a risk that this would slowly strangle some of the business of football. That, like, this would, right now, what we're in football is this really bizarre system that I think in some ways has sort of, like, accidentally maximized how many eyeballs you can get on football. And there's going to be, like, purposely fewer if you take away all of these different weird little angles of competition that currently exist.
Yeah, this is to some degree why, like, my fervent belief about the concept of a Super League, and we've talked about it on this podcast before. I wrote about it, like, God, I think it's like 3 years ago at this point at The Athletic, is that if you're going to do it, you need to take the teams out of the domestic league and put the Super League on top of the pyramid. Because that creates a competition then in these domestic leagues without the great teams. And the great teams are still playing all the time in the Super League. And, you know... Now, the problem there is that the pyramid needs to be connected. And, like, obviously, as we are seeing right now, what these teams want is to be insulated from the possibility of relegation. Now, are there ways around that? Probably. But, like, that's not what these teams are looking to do. These teams are looking to replace the Champions League with a permanent league. And if you do that, then you just – there is no point to the domestic leagues anymore. Now, can, like, sort of history and fandom save them? It's a lot bigger ask when there is no point to them and you can't catch the best teams that are also in the Super League. Like, this is the major sticking point here. This is the problem with the whole thing in terms of, like, projecting forward how this stuff works. And what ends up working, I think, is the Super League. Like, there's a reason that these teams recognize this as a good idea. But, like, the flip side is that what Florentino Perez goes on TV and says about how they're going to save all of soccer because they're going to distribute this money to them is mostly bullshit. Like, because the point then is that those leagues become purely competitors to you. Like, purely. And, you know, their existence matters as a way for Liverpool fans and Manchester City fans to argue which of the two teams had a better season when one wins one and one wins the other. Like, that's it. And, like, to be fair, we've seen a little bit of what that looks like with La Liga during the height of Messi and Ronaldo. Which is, like, it wasn't good for La Liga. Like, La Liga didn't grow. La Liga was, like, atrophied to the point where Barcelona and Real Madrid were trying to find a way out of La Liga because being the two best teams in La Liga while mostly competing against each other and also competing against each other in the Champions League was not a tie that rose all boats. It rose those two teams who, like, didn't really care about the rest. And like, that's the situation that you were setting up in every single domestic league across Europe with no end in sight. Like, there was to that Real Madrid and Barcelona possibly a cyclical turn and end, which like sort of happened, kind of. And probably would when Messi leaves, like to some degree or another. But like, if you have the entrenched Super League, there is no end to that cycle ever. It's permanent.
Yeah, and I think that like one thing this gets at is that is precisely the groups that are harmed. The clubs that are harmed the most by this are the clubs that are in the top leagues, but not in the Super League.
Yes.
Like, they are the ones who get squeezed. Like, I think that, like, the current system is absolutely awful for, like, the 30th club in England. And it is just sort of like, you know, the championship is destroying these clubs. The Premier League's dominance over the championship in revenues is slowly killing off these clubs in one fashion or another. And then the teams even further down the pyramid that, like, you know, if you're a fan of a League Two team, like, the thing you're getting out of that is not the dream of being in the champion in the Premier League. That there's other, like,
psychic
benefits that, like, you know, would more or less remain under this system.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it is precisely like Leicester City that is being squeezed by this. It is Atalanta. It is Mainz. Sevilla. It is Sevilla. Like, and not just the teams like right there near the Champions League.
No,
but those are the teams that get a lot of money from these certainly the teams lower in the Premier League, but even to a lesser degree, lower level teams in.
It's basically in everybody from West Ham to Southampton in the Premier League.
Yep.
Like, it really is.
Yeah. And so like, those are the teams. And if those are the teams that in the Premier League and in other leagues as well, have made the last few years fun by creating competition for those Champions League spots that has ultimately mostly just led to the same teams winning. Because like, inequality, that's how large inequality is. But nonetheless, it has been exciting.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, like, just because the race ends with the favorite winning doesn't mean that, like, it wasn't a race.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, Leicester City is, like, this is the thing here, right? Like, between yesterday and today, the fortunes of Spurs, Arsenal, and Leicester City diverged dramatically. And there is really not very much about Leicester City that you look at and say they are less deserving than Arsenal and Spurs, other than commercial revenue. Like, nothing about the talent on the field, the performance on, like, none of these things, other than, like, Arsenal and Spurs are in London and have shiny stadiums. And, like, more people buy their gear. Like, that's it.
Right. And you know, that's also the reason that over time, in the currently existing system, we project Spurs and Arsenal to win more games than Leicester City over the next 10 years.
Right. But that's something that could change in a 10-year time span. Like, Arsenal are not Manchester, Spurs in particular, are not Manchester United. Like, they've built themselves a very nice commercial edge. But, like, I don't know. Leicester City goes on a run and makes, you know, 3 Champions Leagues out of 4, and Spurs finish 11th, 9th, and 7th. It is not clear to me that Spurs' commercial edge remains significant over Leicester City's. And it is obviously true to me that you could elect to have different regulatory regimes that would smooth that out if you so chose. But you don't so choose. You're like, you know, there's a reason why Spurs want to be in this project. And it's because you want to do the opposite. You don't want to risk those getting smoothed out either by competitiveness or regulatory regime. You want to entrench the difference that exists right now and make sure that it is immune to performance.
Yeah, I think that, like, the existence, I think this is one of the things that we are sort of talking through here, is like the big change of this league is just structurally getting rid of certain small percentage chances of things happening that are unusual.
Yeah.
A certain set of upsets. And,
but like the certain set of upsets, it's two things. One, it is getting rid of the chance of a certain set of upsets, but two, it is also getting rid of the results of those upsets. Like, you know, Leicester City fans, if they qualify for the Champions League, or West Ham fans, if they qualify for the Champions League, then have, now it's six, but once the Champions League changes its form, it's however many, you know, the bigger set of matches that they get to play the next season that are different than what have come before. And like one team doing that every 5 years, like, is a large difference in the world of competitiveness, larger than just finishing fourth versus fifth, right? Like, it's not just finishing fourth versus fifth. It's finishing fourth and then the next year playing those Champions League matches. And even if we, like, stipulate that they don't go anywhere, that's still different for those fans in a really real and tangible way. So,
yeah, it certainly is. I think the thing that I am concerned about is not, like, that we should, you know, happily wave that goodbye. Like, this is right. This is a real loss. It is that I think we risk romanticizing a system that currently is...
Yeah, this is part of the reason why I think that, like, a well-constructed Super League might have been preferable to the status quo. But you can't get a well-constructed Super League. You could only get the Super League that the teams at the top want, and the teams at the top want a permanently, terribly constructed Super League that, you know, concentrates power in them.
Right, and what's going on right now with, so the fight, as I see it, like, the teams that are getting screwed, the clubs are getting screwed the most are those teams in the middle, and we've seen... You know, we've seen Sevilla come out with a strong statement against this. This is, you know, those are the clubs that have the most to lose. And then on top of that, who has the most to lose is UEFA, who run the Champions League.
Yes. No, and, I mean, this is like an extinction level event for them.
Exactly. And,
well, to be honest, and I should be careful, right? Because, like, technically I work for a Champions League rights holder, like, but... You know, I obviously have skin in the game with the continued existence of the Champions League, like, professionally, but I know nothing. Like, I know nothing the public doesn't know. But, like, it is that reason that I would be surprised if UEFA just, like, stopped running the Champions League, even if, like, they went ahead and made the Super League. Like, why? Why would they stop running it? With just running it without those teams?
Yeah, like one of the things I think has been clear is that they just have nothing to lose right now.
They do not.
Because the only stuff that I see them doing where I'm like, I don't think you're going to do that, is banning players from the Euros or banning clubs from the Champions League. Because
I think they'd ban clubs from the Champions. I mean, I think that the banning clubs from the Champions League and banning clubs from domestic competitions is really on the table. And I think it's really on the table for exactly the reasons we've been talking about, which is, like, what is the upside of leaving these clubs and these competitions to solely desiccate and waste away?
I mean, I think that, like, there's a... But at this, I mean, but if you remove them from the competition, they're going to slowly desiccate and waste away. Like, they're pointing the gun at their own head.
Well, a little bit, but, like, I mean, there's a... You can build a model that exists without those clubs.
I mean, well, just to sort of cycle back around to this, because this is sort of what I think is going on, is that... What UEFA has proposed is a system which guarantees more and a larger share of revenue for the biggest clubs.
Right.
And Bayern Munich, I thought, put out a very telling statement today against the Super League, And one of the really interesting sort of side stories here is the German teams opposing this. Dortmund, which is one of the teams, like Dortmund, like Spurs, Arsenal, Milan, like as a sort of purely business thing, like this is, they are one of the teams that would benefit the most from this.
From being in it, yeah.
And there seem to be some league regulations within the Bundesliga that make leaving a dicier decision. And then on top of that, you have not just the fact of the 51% rule and the public ownership, but the sort of norms of responsibility that come along with that. All of these seem to have constrained the German teams. But what it doesn't constrain Bayern Munich from doing is saying that what we need is a more rationalized system with, you know, constraints on wages and on agent fees. Like, that's what they said in their statement against the Super League. And, like, there's a certain set of things that these teams all agree on that seem to be the...
owners get more money, players get less money.
The place we end up with, exactly, which is that the owners of these few biggest teams... they don't guarantee all of the money, and they don't get to impose a, like, as strict a sort of quasi-salary cap as they think they could within a Super League, but they get to do some of it. It seems to me, so, like, the UEFA fighting it and the teams fighting it, UEFA would be more or less fine with guaranteeing somewhat more revenues for the biggest teams, and West Ham and Sevilla would and Bayern obviously would be just as happy as the Super League teams to impose more wage controls.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And so I think that this converges.
I gotta be honest. It's not immediately clear to me that we are both like incredibly pro labor, pro player people here. It is not incredibly obvious to me that the equilibrium point we are at now with player salaries is actually a healthier one, and that somewhat more control over salaries wouldn't be better for the health of the game in the whole. Now, what that means distributionally is like you really need to regulate so that it just doesn't end up being profit that gets capital, you know, that gets pocketed by like six owners of the biggest clubs in the world. But like, it is not clear to me that like a degree of somewhat lowering salaries at the top end combined with redistribution would not be healthier for European soccer on the whole.
It seems to me that what we're heading toward is somewhat lowering salaries on the whole and the opposite of redistribution.
Yes, I think that is correct. Again, the problem is that like the... if you were to undertake some of the steps that world soccer is taking now with a different end goal in sight, they could conceivably be good steps. But the end goal in sight is clearly not the overall health of European soccer. It is the pockets of the biggest clubs.
Yeah, and so like over the course of today, I have become, I mean, we'll see what happens when we return to podcast in a few days. But over the course of today, I have become much more optimistic that this is not going to happen. And at the same time, much less hopeful that something good could come out of this.
I mean, I think that is correct.
It seems like this is failing more than I thought it would, which is, you know, fantastic. They didn't get the 15 teams on side. Like, you can't have a guaranteed 15-team league without the 15 teams, like, fighting together and all rowing together in the same boat. They didn't do that. But what is clearly being pushed as a compromise proposal, as a way to bring everyone back, is giving these teams somewhat more of the things that they want, which are also the things that the teams that they'd be compromising with want.
Right. I guess to circle back to like my alternate vision here of how this could go is that like UEFA blows up the nuclear bomb and it happens anyway. That you do get the Super League, UEFA knocks these teams out of domestic competitions and says, if you were in the Super League, you can't play in the domestic competitions. These teams say, fine. Now, I would say that like the reason this is a powerful option for UEFA is that the numbers don't all of a sudden really start to not work. for a 20-team league if you don't have the 18 games plus playoffs plus your 38-game domestic schedule, 34-game in Germany. But, like, they could always just, the Super League could just, like, say, fine, we'll play more games and make it up that way and make themselves a self-contained league. But, like, all of a sudden, if that's what happens, you're getting close to the idea of a league on top of the pyramid.
I think that, like, one thing that is really unclear at this point is exactly how strong the solidarity of the 12 is.
Yes.
And not just how strong the solidarity, but also how strong their will is. Like, they could be working together and willing to accept half a loaf that Karl-Heinz Rummenigge is offering them.
That's true.
And so, like, and how, and so, like, because their will is only be as strong as their solidarity, but it also, you know, they could be all working together for a lesser, somewhat lesser goal. And we just don't know right now. And there are some really bizarre nuclear options on the table,
yeah.
Which those offer both, like, those would be interesting. I don't know. I'd like a peek into those universes at least. And those offer the possibility of a, like, serious restructuring of European soccer at the end of it.
Right.
And what looks more likely to, and what looks more likely to me right now is rather European soccer keeps slowly marching toward something like, not this Super League.
Right.
But
I agree.
Something,
I
mean, like that.
I agree. Like, I mean, I think that is the most likely outcome.
And I think that, like, when you're talking about, like, when you're starting to put a real Super League on top of these levels, like, that is what the Champions League is slowly becoming in the Swiss proposal. Like,
well, yes and no. I mean, when I say that if you want to make a Super League, it should sit on top of the pyramid, I mean that those teams, if they qualify for the Super League, should not be playing in their domestic league competition.
Right, and what, as you add more games, you're squeezing out the cups. Like, it's a process. Like, that
right,
is...
Right, but, like, it is a process, but I don't think that you ever get to the process of teams not being in their domestic league. I think you... Like, I think when you go this way, you get through the process of, like, well, I guess if we qualify for the Champions League, we have to play the youth team in the League Cup, right? Like, that's the way... And what I'm saying is that, like, that's backwards. To me, if you want to set up a healthy pyramid, you gotta structure it actively so that the teams are not playing in their domestic league. And in fact, what I would say is the way you do it is they play in the cups, their domestic cups, but not their domestic league. And the domestic league that they play in is the Super League. And to me, that is the only way that the pyramid can, like, exist in form for another 70 years. You know, like to me, that is the only way it happens. And, like, the, like, fairy tale scenario here is that, like, the Super League teams plow through UEFA and the domestic leagues maintain solidarity and kick all these teams out. But you still have this, like, open system at the bottom of it so that, like, every year, like, teams can win their way into the Super League and then, like, leave their domestic league for that year and play in the Super League. And, like, maybe they stay up there. Maybe they get relegated. I don't know. But, like to me, like, if you can get to that point through this, that's a really interesting endpoint. It's just, like, so messy that I can't imagine you'd ever get there from here.
Yeah, you would have, like, actual business competition between leagues in a way that, like, there's a certain degree to which it happens with, like, you know, international contracts, but, like, I think back more, like, there hasn't been, like, a real, like, all of these pyramid systems, one of the purposes of creating a pyramid is that so no other league is competing with you.
Right.
And, like, I mean, this has happened in U.S. sports. Breakaway leagues very quickly became, like, a second, they either failed or they became a second league. Like, the American League formed as a challenger to the existing one national league in baseball. the ABA and AFL in basketball and football had similar structures. And like, it's an extremely unstable situation. When you have actual competition between leagues, it will eventually, it'll settle very quickly into something, whether right. it is a merger, whether it is one or the other failing and sort of like returning with their tail between their legs, whatever right. it is, it'll happen.
Right. But so you can envision this ending up in a place where it just settles as the league on top of the European pyramid.
Right.
Like that is the eventual, like, you know, stasis point. And like, we would probably, what I would imagine is we'd go through like some iterations where like teams win their domestic league and get invited to play in the Super League, and they like turn it down because it is immoral and wrong. And then you go to the next and like, you would have all of this stuff. But eventually where you could in theory end up is that de facto the Super League becomes the tip of the pyramid, and all of these teams that are playing in it are no longer playing in their domestic leagues.
Yeah, that is, I don't think that is likely, but this is one of the things that, like, if the Super League teams have the solidarity and the will to stick it out when they are kicked out by their domestic leagues, when they are kicked out by UEFA.
And that presupposes UEFA and the domestic leagues having the solidarity to kick them out.
Right. And then at the same time, like, because one possibility is they have generally I think that if these teams have the solidarity and the will, they will win.
It won't
matter how much other people hate it.
Yeah,
like, seemed to me that like their solidarity has been shown to be weaker than I thought, because like PSG and Bayern not in the group. And then the sort of solidarity and the will of the opposition groups of UEFA and the non-Super League clubs has been greater than I expected. And that needed to be quite significant to have a chance here. I think the sort of structurally the cards are stacked toward the breakaway clubs, toward the Super League clubs. And they seem to be failing a bit. And like, more likely than not, again, I find these to be very unstable sort of power relationships, and I expect them to settle quickly, whether it is the breakaway clubs just getting what they want and getting offering very few sort of a few maybe face saving concessions to UEFA and the leagues, or vice versa, which seems more possible now than ever. Something like Bayern's plan for improved wage controls and bringing the clubs back in and they give up on the Super League. So in either of those cases, we don't get something particularly good at the end of it. Either right. we get this Super League, which I think is like, you know, as much as I want to like challenge the idea that we are losing something wonderful and good and equal, we'd be losing a lot and gaining very little, I think. And then at the same time, if the leagues and UEFA win based on what seems to be the baseline here, we would be losing a little and gaining nothing. So losing a lot and gaining very little, or losing very little and gaining nothing, seem to be the two most likely sort of, you know, rebalancing situations. But as Goodman is saying, like, there's a lot of uncertainty here, and these groups could fail to find an agreement quickly. Yep. And some of them are like really personally super mad at each other. And Florentino Perez seems to believe that like this is his calling in life. Like,
he does seem to believe it's like his calling in life to like negotiate the outcome without like the cars hitting each other playing chicken.
Yeah.
Like, you know, being the master negotiator and building the Super League for Europe that makes everybody happy. Or at least that everybody says they're happy with.
If you were,
whereas like Agnelli, right? Juventus is Agnelli, just seems like he wants to, you know, like his colleague is to blow everything up so that he gets more money.
Yeah. I mean, Agnelli, like, seems to not just sort of the money is at stake and he's like very, very happy to do various immoral things for more money. He seems to legitimately like have an ideological belief that it is wrong that a team could, like, there seems to be like this sort of aristocratic idea that very it is so. Wrong that a team could qualify based on merit. Like, he's opposed to the idea of merit, not merely...
In professional sports!
Yep.
Like, which, like, I don't know. I guess if you allegedly, you know, played in a league that allegedly, like, ensured through various nefarious means that the best teams were always the best, you might suggest that, yes, actually competing to win is not what we were designed to do here.
Yeah, so most likely, like, nobody is winning, but if things could, there is that small possibility right. that things get blown up so weird that, like, something new emerges from the ashes. And I think one of the things I'm sort of pressing on the, like, things are not so great now is why I feel somewhat positively about that small percentage chance of something new emerging from the ashes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. Like, you could just... Yeah, anyway, I don't know.
I don't know. All right, so what I like about this is that what we did was we did a podcast with all of our takes, and then in a few days we're going to talk to an expert on some of the business and history of this.
That's how we roll,
this
buddy.
This is the take economy right here, and it is perfect. It needs no structural improvements.
All right, and on that note, we'll be back later this week with an interview with Josh Robinson.
All right. Oh, and we'll talk about Josie and stuff. Cheers, y'all.
And we'll talk about Josie and stuff. Cheers, y'all.